Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is September the 13th, 2024, it's the 11th day of Tishri, 28. We will start our first service today with a song, and then we're going to do our prayer and go into our service for today. Okay, our prayer thought, our sermon, is going to be a continuation from what we were doing yesterday with Who is Israel by the Promise? And we finished up on page 81 of the Shepherd Rod Book, Volume 4, of V. T. Holler. And we're going to defer to right now to a prayer thought. We're going to read it from the Bible. And we're going to read Psalms, start with Psalms 19. It says, "The heavens declare the glory of the Yahweh, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day utter speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words unto the end of the world. And them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices as a strong man to run a race." Okay. "His going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof." Now, and it's amazing how David was using his son. He says, the line has gone out through all the earth, and their words unto the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun. So he's talking about the sun that gives light to the whole our solar system, for all the planets that revolve around it. And he says, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. And that's like the sun coming up in the morning, and we look for it every morning. We have to have it. And rejoices as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of the heaven. So the sun there in the heaven, his going forth is from the end of the heaven. And his circuit unto the ends of it. And his circuit is to the end of heaven. And there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The sun giveth heat to all of those planets that it's created for. And there's nothing hid from it. You can't hide anything from the sun as far as the heat. The law of the Yahshua. Now it says Lord here, and we understand that Lord shall converse into the name Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh. For the law of the Yahshua is perfect, converting the soul. The law of Yahshua is perfect. What is the law of Yahshua? It's Leviticus 23. And atonement is one of those laws of Leviticus 23. There's 44 verses in Leviticus 23. And John 15:10, where Yahshua wrote this himself, and he gave it to his disciples, he says, "If you keep my commandments," that's the laws of the sanctuary, "you shall abide in my love, even as I've kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love." So he says, if you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love. But if you don't keep my commandments, you will not abide in my love. Okay, so for the law of the Yahshua is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Yahshua is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Yahshua are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Yahshua is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Yahshua is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Yahshua are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in the keeping of them, that's Yahshua's statutes, there is a great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from the secret fault. Keep back thy servant also from the presumptuous sin. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. And that great sin's transgression is denying the Holy Spirit and His message that He has for you. That's the unpardonable sin. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Yahshua, my strength and my redeemer. So David is talking to Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, all the way here. Okay. Okay. First shall no more. This is a shepherd rod. Book 4. 50 Hollis says, who is Israel by the promise? And this would be part 3. And the title for this sermon, subtitle is Furnish Straw No More. Okay, it says that okay. And Pharaoh commanded the same day the taskmasters of the people, and they're also saying, you shall no more give the people straw to make brick as heretofore. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And the taskmasters of the people went out, and their officers, and they spake unto the people, saying, thus saith the Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. Go you and get you straw where you can find it. Yet not all of your work shall be diminished. Exodus 5, 6, 7, 10, and 11. Pharaoh will not furnish straw, that is, he will not render any help, but the people must produce the same amount of bricks. In the beginning of this organization, Seventh-day Adventists, as a denominational institution, sanitarium, and hospitals were built for the purpose of caring for our own people, members of the church. If the cause of the patient had been diagnosed, the cause being made known with the instruction, some aid or treatment were to be given. this help was to be rendered whether they were able to pay much, little, or nothing. Such is the work of the Good Samaritan. In the formal numbers of the testimonies for the church, I have spoken of the importance of the Seventh-day Adventist establishing an institution for the benefit of the sick, especially for the suffering and sick among us. I have spoken of the ability of our own people and the point of means to do this, and have urged that in the view of the importance of this branch of the great work of the preparation to meet the Yeshua, when I saw those who managed and directed running into the dangers shown me, of which I had warned them in public, and also in the private conversation and letters, a terrible burden came upon me. That which had been shown me as a place where the suffering sick among us could be helped was one where sacrifice, hospitality, faith, and piety should be the ruling principle. But when the unqualified calls were made for the large sums of the money, with the statement that stock taken would pay large percent, when the brethren who occupied positions in the institution seemed more than willing to take large wages, and then those were satisfied with who fill others, and equally important stations in the great cause of the truth and reform. When I learned with the pain that in order to make the institution popular with those people not of our faith, and to see the institutions popular with those not of our faith, and to secure their patronage, a spirit of the compromise was rapidly gaining ground at the Institute, manifested in the use of Mrs. instead of brother and sister, and in popular amusement in which all could engage, and a sort of comparatively innocent frolic. When I saw these things, I said, this is not that which was shown me as an institution for the sick, which would share the signal blessing of Yahweh. This is another thing. And yet, calculations for more extensive buildings were made, and calls for large sums of money were urged. As it was then managed, I could but regard the Institute on the whole as a curse. Several who came to Battle Creek humble, devoted, a confiding Christian, went away almost infidel, for the general influence of his sins was creating a prejudice against the health reform, and the very many of the most humble, the most devoted, and the best of our brethren, and was destroying faith in my testimony and in the present truth. For the brethren who have stood at the head of this work have appealed unto our people for the means, on the ground that the health reform is a part of the great work connected with the third angel's message, and this they have been right. It is a branch of the great charitable, liberal, sacrificing, benevolent work of the Yahweh. Then why should these brethren say stop, and the Health Institute will pay a large percent? It is a good investment, a paying thing. Why not as well talk or stop in the Publishing Association paying a large percent, if these are two branches of the same great closing work of the preparation for the coming of the Son of Man? Why not, or why not, make them both matters of liberality? The pen and the voice that appealed unto the friends of the cause in behalf of the publishing fund held out no such inducement. Volume 1, pages 633-636. How do our institutions now measure with this straight testimony? Can we say they are charitable, liberal, sacrificing, benevolent institutions? Listen to the enormous profits they make. Presentment is here made of the annual report of St. Helena's Sanitarium as it appeared in the Pacific Union Recorder, April 25, 1929. The notes payable at the end of 1925 were $60,044. The cents are not here given. In 1926, they had been reduced to $49,031. In 1927, to $36,321. And at the close of 1928, they were down to $26,415. In 3 years, they were reduced from $60,000 to $33,629. Resources fixed and current at the close of 1928, $371,105. And liabilities, $45,809. There is a decrease in the liabilities of the nearly $5,000. Cash on hand at the close of 1928, $10,749. Present worth, $325,296. The gross income, $456,258. The net income is $437,284. $437,284. For the average daily attendance of the patients was 85 plus, and the income from the patients direct was $261,363. The net gain was $10,439. How could it be possible for an institution to do any charitable work at all, and yet earn $111,988 above its present worth in one single year? Note, present worth, $325,296. Net income, $437,284 in 1928. But this is not their worst. Our brethren have gone so blind that they think these enormous prophets give them a wonderful credit for their wise management, and boast over it and say that the sanitarium is facing sunshine. Surely all Yahweh knew what he was saying when he said the lay of the sins are blind, wretched, and miserable, and poor, and naked, though they think they are rich and increased with the good, and have need of nothing. See the contrast of the boasting between the lay of the sins and other institutions, of whom some often think the devil is their leader. Following is the annual report of a mission in Los Angeles for the corresponding year of 1928. These items being given free of the charge to the needy, the annual report for the year ending December 31st, 1928, shows $527,487.34. Pieces, barber service, $23,334. The bass, $12,339. Garments and distributed, $32,541. By groups from the churches of all denominations. Copied from a Los Angeles newspaper. Has the devil become more charitable than Yahshua? Why have we gone to sleep? Is it dollars and cents that Yahshua wants? Are these things not destroying the confidence of the public and the people of Yahweh? Are these things adding or distracting from the fruit of our labor? Are we representing Yahweh and carrying the third angel's message unto a dying world? Is Yahshua our pattern and example? Why have we allowed the devil to deceive us? Is not this a call to arouse the people of Yahweh unto a Christ-like service? How long shall we stay asleep? It is bad enough for Yahweh's people to turn down one who is not in the faith from receiving the benefits of Yahweh at the hand of his people. But it is a thousand times worse to turn down one of Israel. He who would sacrifice and cast his lot with the people of Yahweh, faithful in the tithes paying and offering, as Yahshua has prospered, if the Yahweh should permit poverty to overtake such a one with a sickness or old age, what do we do with them? Do we send them away and tell them Yahweh bless thee? Is the country hospital for Yahweh's people? And Yahweh's hospital for money making? Is the country farm for Yahweh's people? there with the unrighteous and with the unclean on their table, as we believe from a religious standpoint, amidst profanity, swine, and tobacco? Is this the kind of place for the child of Yahweh and the temple of the Holy Spirit according unto our faith? What kind of answer will we give him when he comes? Well, we hear the words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." As we read in Matthew 25:35-36, "For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me." Shall this sin be ours, or will we find ourselves at the left hand with the terrible curse, as in Matthew 25:41-46? "Depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and you visited me not. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal." Quoting Volume 1, page 639, as early as 1850, this brother became a Sabbath keeper, and from that date he contributed liberally to the several enterprises that had been undertaken to advance the cause, till he became reduced in poverty. Yet, when the urgent, unqualified call came for the Institute, he took stock to the amount of $100 at the meeting so-and-so place. He introduced the case of his wife, who is very feeble, and who can be helped, but must be helped soon, if ever. He also stated his circumstances and said that if he could command the $100, then in the Institute he could send his wife there to be treated. But as it was, he could not. We replied that he should never have invested a dollar in the Institute, that there was a wrong in the matter which we could not help, and there the matter stopped. I do not hesitate to say that this sister should be treated a few weeks at least at the Institute free of charge. Her husband is able to do but little more than to pay her fare to and from the Battle Creek. Do we have such cases as these at the present time? Do we deal with these people like some farmer deals with his horse? He takes good care of the horse while it is young and doing his work. But when the animal gets old and feeble, he then drives it out in the open field in the winter weather, just at the time the poor horse needs the best of care. Are we not like this hard-hearted farmer who starves his horse in the winter weather? With the frost on the back of a worn-out animal to save a few bundles of straw? Cruel it is Is it not? It is left to the reader to answer the question. Okay, it says the midwife. Our subtitle now is midwife. Okay, it says that midwives are subtitle, but the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and they were grieved because of the children of the Israel, and the king of Egypt spake unto the Hebrew midwives, and he said, when you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, if it be a son, then you shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. Exodus 1:12, 15-16. For the midwives symbolize the church school teachers who nurse the children in the system of the education. You may ask, is it possible that the devil would attempt to deceive the teachers and poison the children's mind? For the devil is not leaving one string loose. Reference is here made to the Home and School Journal of the Christian Education of the December 1929, published by the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventists, Washington, D.C., and every teacher in the denomination is supposed to be a subscriber of this magazine. The above-mentioned issue is full of the Christmas stories, Christmas keeping, and Christmas program, and gifts, which the teachers are supposed to pass on to the children. As it would be too lengthy to quote it all, only the very last sentence and the closing words with the paragraph, what Christmas may always mean, is quoted here. And in the general, a baptism of the reality, simplicity, and sincerity in the observance of the world's supreme birthday. Think of these words, dear reader. A Seventh-day Adventist paper published by the General Conference to exalt the world's supreme idolatrous day unto a birthday of the usher, and hand it to the teachers of the denomination. But the midwives feared Yahweh and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men's children alive. Exodus 1:17. Here we have one good symbol, and let us say, Amen, for the teachers. They fear the Yahweh. We urge you to send your children to the school of the denomination, for it is the best place for them. The name of the one was Shipra, and the name of the other was Puah. Exodus 1:15. The meaning of these names are beauty and splendor. Indeed it is. It would have been impossible for two midwives to wait on the great multitude of women, but the fact is that there were only two. The reason for this is to make the symbol perfect, meaning both classes of teachers, male and female, beauty and splendor. Okay, our next subtitle is Male Children in the Nile. Therefore the Yahweh dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. For the Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. Exodus 1:20-22. For the chief object of the Pharaoh's scheme was not to reduce the people in the number. Had this been his aim, he should have killed the female, for in those days they practiced polygamy. Had he given an order to cast the female children in the river and save the males, he could have accomplished his purpose, and also added to his slaves. For it was a man who produced the bricks. We read in Patriarchs and Prophets, page 242. Satan was the mover in this matter. He knew that a deliverer was to be raised up among the Israelites, and by leading the king to destroy their children, he hoped to defeat their divine purpose. This was the object of the whole affair. As this is a symbol, the application will now be made. For the Testimonies to Ministers, page 475, with the chapter entitled, Let Heaven Guide, we read, prophecy must be fulfilled. The Yahshua says, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah. And when he appears, men may say, you are too earnest. You do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your mercy. No plainer statement could have been made than this, that we must look for a prophet or a message in the near future. If this is an inspired statement, then it seems it would be the duty of the watchman on the walls of Zion to educate and instruct the people that there is a prophet or a message to look for. But what have we? On the contrary, the general opinion of the entire denomination is, no prophet cometh, neither is there any message to be expected. We have all the truth, and we need none. And the cry from the camp of Israel, thus they see how the old enemy has duplicated his underhand deception with the church at the present time. Just as the Pharaoh was unconscious of the main purpose of his command, just so by the unconsciousness of the leaders, the shrewd deceiver has attempted to drown the prophet or the message of the reform. For the present time, thus it proves in the every instance that the experience of Israel in Egypt is a photograph of the Israel, the truth. If a prophet or even a message should come, the church is not ready to accept either. The result may be the same as it was with the Jewish nation and the coming of the Yahshua. how terrible the thought. What it seemed to the Egyptians in the interest of the empire to hold these people in bondage, the real purpose behind it all was the determination of the Satan, the dragon power, Isaiah 51:9, to hold the people of the Israel in the bondage of sin and to prevent the work of the reform under which Yahweh has set his hand as the time of the prophecy came. Review and Herald, January 23, 1930. Male children of the denomination how drowned. Has the devil drowned any of the male children in the river? Now at this time, where are the men in the denomination? They must be in the river now, for it is a symbol of the sin in the world. And that is where we generally find the men and the women in the church. The question may be asked, what has shifted out the men? The spirit of the prophecy teaches that we should see to it that employment is furnished to newcomers and the truth to make it possible for them to keep the Sabbath, also to take care of the poor and sick among us. This instruction has been altogether disregarded with result that the men are shifted out of the church. Men love the truth as much as women do, but as soon as they hear the truth, they begin to inquire about things. Immediately the difficulty arises, and the question is asked, how can I keep the Sabbath and yet hold my position? If I should let my position go, can I secure another? Would the church help me find something to do? Would the church render some assistance in case of a great need, such as a lack of food, clothing, or in case of sickness? All these questions are answered at the once with no. The result is the decision is made and the truth is turned down. If the church had furnished some encouragement along these lines, this position would not have been taken by these newly interested parties, and the result would have been that the men as well as the women would have been in the church. Men being the wage earners, the increase of the tithes and offerings cannot be estimated, and the little expenditure in the helps would be but a fragment and a comparison. Employment agencies would be a great help for the denomination. Not only employment would have been secured from the people outside of the organization, but the work among the Adventists would be secured by the Adventists. Thus, the men are cast into the world, the Nile, but the women are left alive in the church. Moses found by the princes. This is our next subtitle. Quoting Exodus 2, 2 and 3, and a woman conceived, and a woman conceived, and bare a son, and when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of the bulrushes and daubed it with the slime and with the pitch and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. Providence led the Egyptian princess to the river to wash herself, and after seeing the ark, she sent her maid to fetch it. She saw that the babe wept, and she had compassion on him. The sister of the babe stepped to Pharaoh's daughter and said, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew woman, that she may nurse the child for thee?" On the arrival of the child's mother, Pharaoh's daughter said, "Take this child away and nurse it for me." And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter at the age of 12, and the prince's name him Moses. The lesson here is, with all the satanic schemes, it would be impossible to defeat the divine purpose. Moses' choice, our next subtitle. As Moses the type received the highest education in the courts of Pharaoh, that the courts of Pharaoh could produce, after becoming of the age, he was compelled to choose one of the two things, either the throne of Egypt or to suffer affliction with the children of Israel. Just so, modern Moses, the antitype, receives the highest education the denomination can produce. When of age, finished education, professor, modern Moses is well being compelled to choose one of the two things, either professor in the world, Egypt, with a large income, fame, and the pleasures of sin for a season, or to work for the denomination with a small salary and suffer affliction with the church, the children of Israel, as the Moses the type chose the latter. Just so Moses the antitype prefers to stay with the denomination, esteeming the reproach of the Yahshua greater, riches than the treasures of Egypt. The statistics of the movement, so we are told, show that 90% of the children who go to schools of the denomination remain true to the message. This proves the lesson taught here is correct. Moses, a misconception. This is our next subtitle. It says, "And it came to pass in those days, when the Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren, and he spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew. He slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews that strove together, and he said unto him that did the wrong, Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared, but Moses fled from the face of the Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, Exodus 2:11-15. Moses supposed he was to deliver the children of Israel by the force of their arms. Therefore he rolled up his sleeves and went about his duty. Moses missed the conception of the method to be used in the deliverance of the Israel was not the only thing wrong with the man. If that was the way he understood Israel was to obtain their freedom, he failed to carry out the plan. His trouble was not because of the lack of the education or training as a general of the armies that he failed to carry out his project. But because he was too cowardly and feared Pharaoh. If this was not the cause of his failure, why then kill only one Egyptian? Bury him in the sand, and after it was made known, run away and leave Israel to perish in slavery. In his intention or understanding, was to lead Israel against the armies of Egypt. He should not have hidden the Egyptian in the sand, but let him up on the ground for an example, and then go after others. Failing to carry out his proposed scheme, Moses made a double mistake. This ancient Moses is a symbol of the modern Moses, present leadership. As Moses' failure was not because of the lack of training, but because of a misconceived idea of the method to be carried out. Just so with the leadership now. As Moses failed to accomplish his own mistaken plan, what he supposed was wise judgment, just so the leadership have now failed on their part. The aim has been to finish the work in this generation, which is practically past, and at the rate of the speed the work is going now, it could not be finished in another 100 years. We are in the danger of trusting to methods, organization, and high-pressure service, which if taken alone can, in the end, result only in the confusion, dissatisfaction, and defeat. Review and Herald, February 20, 1930. The application of the type is our next subtitle. If the Pharaoh is the king, the leadership, who rules over the people, then the church is the queen. Then the princess is the church school. Egypt is a symbol of the world, and the Nile a symbol of the sins of the world. By the aid of the Yahweh, a fearing mother, Moses, the type, was not cast into the river Nile. Just so with the modern Moses, who by the help of his Christian mother is saved from the river Nile, the sin in the world, but when she cannot keep him any longer and must send him to the schools of the land where sin reigns, the church school, the princess, finds him as Moses the type received his education by the aid of the princess, just so modern Moses receives his education by the aid of the church school. We, like the Moses, have thought that we are to deliver Israel by the force of arms, the aid of men. Like Moses, we are too cowardly to accomplish anything. It has been said by a good minister of Yahweh, this is wrong in the church, and that is not right, and should be corrected, but we can not do it. Why? Because he is afraid he will lose his job. But what shall we do? Work for the Yahweh and trust in him, or work for Pharaoh and trust in the job? Quoting Volume 5, pages 80 to 82, but the days, by the Ellen G. White, but the days of the purification of the church are hastening on apace, for Yahweh will have a people pure and true, and a mighty sickness soon to take place. We shall be better able to measure the strength of Israel. The signs reveal that the time is near when the Yahshua will manifest that his fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor. Those who have trusted to intellect, genius, or talent will not then stand at the head of the rank and file. They did not keep pace with the light. Those who have proved themselves unfaithful will not then be entrusted with the flock. In the last solemn work, few great men will be engaged. They are self-sufficient, independent of Yahweh, and he cannot use them. For that Yeshua as a faithful servant during the shaking testing time will be disclosed to you. There are precious ones now hidden who have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not had the light which has been shining in a concentrated blaze upon you. But it may be under a rough and uninviting exterior that the pure brightness of a genuine character will be revealed. In this time, the gold will be separated from the dross in the church. Many a star that we have admired for its brilliancy will then go out in darkness. The most weak and hesitating in the church will be as a David, willing to do and dare. Then will the church of the Yeshua appear, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners. Yahweh will work a work in our day, but that few anticipate. He will raise up and exalt among us those who are taught rather by the unction of His Spirit than by the outward training of the scientific institution. These facilities are not to be despised or condemned. They are ordained of the Yahweh, but they can furnish only the exterior qualification. Yahweh will manifest that He is not dependent on the learned, self-important mortals. Okay. Moses in the Wilderness is our next subtitle. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. And the priest of the Midian gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter, to wife. Now Moses kept the flock of the Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of the Yahweh, Horeb. And behold, the bush burned with the fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, while the bush is not burnt. Yahweh called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And the Yeshua said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptian. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of the Egypt. And Moses said unto Yahweh, Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh? And Moses said unto the Yeshua, O my Yeshua, I am not eloquent, neither hitherto for, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy a servant, but I am slow of the speech and of a slow tongue. I am of the uncircumcised lips, and how shall Pharaoh hearken unto me? And the Yeshua said unto him, Who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Yeshua? Now, therefore, go, and I will be thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. And Yeshua said unto him, What is that in thine hand? And he said, A rod. And he said, Cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses fled from before it. And the Yeshua said unto the Moses, Put forth thy hand and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. And he said, O my Yeshua, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. And the anger of the Yeshua was kindled against the Moses. Read Exodus 2:15 to 4:13. Okay, application of the lesson. Okay. Well, this brings us into our step. This hour contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.